Oh, thank you, Melissa. Thank you, everyone. Welcome to the You Project. It's Father Harper here from the Church of the Perpetual Blessed Incarnate Virgin Smelly Sneaker here, Hampton Chapter.
Father Harper.
Yeah, imagine if I was a father. No, we don't want to be that. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
Hi, everyone. Hope you're travelling beautifully. Hope you're rolling up your sleeves, doing the work, being the change, all of those kind of inspirational and motivational things. We've got an alumni in the studio, Nima Alavi, who's a friend of mine, and he's a compounding pharmacist, businessman, entrepreneur, integrative medicine specialist, expert, a million things, all of that and more. Hi, mate.
Hey, mate. How you going?
I'm good, thank you. At least you're not sick tonight. Last time you were here, you were fucking close to death. You're just knocking on the door, and it was it was touch and go whether or not you'd get through the podcast, but you did.
Yeah, I think that roll of toilet paper really helped.
Oh,
yeah.
I forgot about that.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I like
super
that.
Sexy. Like, yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so what we're talking about is Nima had the flu. Was it flu or a cold?
It was a cold.
I had run out of tissues. So very professionally, we gave him a bog roll, which sat on the desk in the studio, and he just kept pulling off sheets. Which is,
I think that was triple play, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. It's good for your bum and your nose. Super sexy. Don't think about that too much. What have you been up to, world's busiest man? Now, you've got a business in South Yarra. You've got the Como Compounding Pharmacy. So I want to talk to you tonight about, of course, we're going to talk about some of the stuff around, you know, we want to talk a bit about e-cigarettes because that's hot right now and integrative medicine, and a little bit about your backstory and a little bit about WADA and the doping stuff, which is an interesting conversation. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about what do you do in the States?
So In the United States, the laws are a little bit more relaxed with respect to compounding and the supply to doctors. That's not really allowed here in Australia. We have to supply patients directly.
Right.
So, you know, a customer being a doctor or a clinic versus a customer being a patient, naturally the scale is going to be very different. So it's a lot busier. And what I find really interesting between Australia and America, I see the different culture, especially in business. You know? So what I can say is, especially in the health space, which is highly regulated, I sort of find the Americans are a lot more, they embrace change.
Yeah.
And we Australians resist change. Generally speaking. And that's why America usually, you know, takes the first step and is, you know, always kind of leading the world in different areas, one being healthcare.
Yeah.
You know, they just the culture there is very different. I see that in the doctors as well. You know, they kind of, they don't mind taking risks.
Would they be at the kind of the front of the pack in terms of integrative medicine and anti-aging in general,
So worldwide, definitely. So the US is pretty much where it's at. So they're leading the world in integrative medicine, and they have been for since integrative medicine kind of emerged, which is probably a good 20-30 years ago. And within the United States, California, holds about 60% of the world's integrative and anti-aging market share.
Wow. Just one state in the States.
One state, yeah. And like if you look at growth hormone sales, because growth hormone is obviously used in integrative medicine as a regenerative in micro doses, but it can do wonders for the body. There's more growth hormones sold in California than the whole world combined.
Wow.
And that's including all the hospitals around the world that prescribe it for children with growth deficiencies and everything else. There's more growth hormones sold in California at micro doses, but they all add up to a larger amount than the whole world combined, which is just phenomenal.
And so is it, can they sell so much of it because it's easy to get prescribed? Like, are they more relaxed with?
No, they're not. It's
like, well, why do they sell so much if it's hard to access?
I think it's just the demand. You know, so California being like a sunshine state, everyone being so conscious of the way they look, you got Hollywood there, you know, Beverly Hills. And,
yeah.
And also I think there's, you know, certain industries reach this critical sort of mass level where they reach this level and they become unstoppable. So the momentum in America for integrative medicine has reached a stage where it's there to stay, you know, whereas in Australia it's still not quite there, and a lot of people don't know what it is. You know,
just explain for us what it is again. We've spoken about it a few
times.
Integrative
medicine?
Yeah.
So
just give us some layman's terms.
Yeah, absolutely. So integrative medicine is, you know, you can refer to it as anti-aging medicine, but the word anti-aging has kind of been a little bit bastardized. So,
and it's a bit inadequate too, because it's more than just that.
Yeah. So I like the term regenerative medicine, because that's essentially what you're doing. You're turning the body back into its regenerative state.
Yeah.
And there's lots of ways of doing that.
Yeah.
But the most effective way of switching the body back into a regenerative state is by restoring certain hormone levels within people. So the human body, you know, roughly about the age of 21 starts to degenerate. So it's like a switch that's switched on or off.
Mm.
Your body is regenerative up until the age of 21.
Mm.
And then from that point on, you become degenerative. And it's a very, very gradual decline until you hit kind of the ages between 45 and 55 is where the decline suddenly
accelerates.
Yeah, yeah. Your hormone levels are free falling. Mm. If you look at the graph, they just start plummeting. And that's menopause for women, and for men it's andropause, which is a very real, you know, form of the male menopause.
Yeah.
So
can we just stay on that for 1 second? Yeah. So I know the answer, but just tell us what andropause is and what some of the effects of andropause might be.
Sure. So andropause is another term for the male menopause.
Mm.
It affects men in between the age of 45 and 55. Mm. It happens to everybody, every male.
Mm.
And basically it's when, you know, your testosterone, your growth hormone, DHEA is another really important, you know, androgenic hormone, a male hormone.
Yeah.
When those hormones start to decline at that accelerated rate, the patient feels the effects, and they feel it because over the, you know, from the age of 21 up until 45, 50, you don't really feel that different every year. The decline is so gradual that you just get used to it. You just notice, like, you know, in your late 30s, you don't recover, you know, as like you did when you were 21. Like if you have a big night out, or if you're going out and, you know, playing sport or whatever else.
Yeah.
But when you sort of hit that andropause stage, you do notice it. Like, you wake up and you feel different, like, every day. So the main symptoms for men, and what we see, you know, the initial sort of symptoms that they present with, is depression, anxiety.
Yeah.
They put on a lot of body fat.
Yeah.
They have no drive.
Sex drive
and just zest. Like, just have no drive to excel, and it affects their work.
Motivation drops, cognitive decline,
memory problems.
Yeah.
And most of these men will go on, well, most of them don't say anything, and they just tough it out, because that's, you know, just what men apparently do. hopefully that's changing, but, you know, up until now, most men...
Bring that mic closer to your face, mate.
Yeah.
Sorry for being so bossy. Yeah.
No worries. I just don't want to eat it, you know?
Yeah. That's all right. You're good.
Most men will, these days, will actually talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, and the ones that have enough courage to go and see a doctor, they'll go and see their general practitioner, which has no idea about integrative medicine. Mm. General practitioner will prescribe them an antidepressant. And which is crazy, because, so that's a Band-Aid, and it might help a little bit. But what they should be getting prescribed is some testosterone therapy.
Because it's the change in the endocrine system that's the cause, or not always, but it can be the cause of all of these symptoms that we see. Yeah, yeah. So the depression, the anxiety, the cognitive decline, the fogginess, the no
That's
sex
what you
drive.
Yeah.
I feel sad. I don't feel...
Yeah, yeah. But there's all this stuff going on, like your cardiovascular system's compromised, you know, your prostate's probably starting to become, you know, slightly enlarged. Mm. That can lead to prostate cancer. Testosterone protects you against all of those things. So if the doctor was to prescribe testosterone for this patient presenting, not only would their depression and anxiety disappear, but their cardiovascular system is now protected. You know, the prostate's protected. Their memory and recall and just, you know, improves. Everything improves. You know, so it's much better.
Why is there so much, and I mean, you don't know, you're not the authority on this and neither am I, but why is there so much, what's the word? I don't know, bullshit around, you know, testosterone. For men, it's like, if you're a woman and you present with menopausal symptoms, then okay, yeah, well, let's do something. Let's medicate. Let's prescribe this. If you're a dude and you go, my dick doesn't work and I feel shit ass and I'm a bit, you know, and I've got not much energy and I'm gaining a bit of fat and like quite often the message is, well, course, because you're 52.
Exactly.
So you're getting old, champ. So that's suck it up and fucking, you know, don't eat too much bread and go for a jog.
That's exactly what happens.
And like, why is that? Why is it socially, and before anyone misinterprets or tries to, we're not talking about taking steroids. We're not talking about building massive biceps. We're not talking about bodybuilding. We're talking about managing the endocrine system for men who are essentially going through an analogous experience to menopause, you know, and to try to keep men healthy. And we know, 100% we know that low testosterone often correlates to depression, yet nobody talks about
that. Nobody talks about it. Even, you know, so I approached Beyond Blue, right, which is obviously people know what that is. It's an organization that looks after, you know, men with depression. And I wanted to basically...
Is it just men or is it men and women?
I think it's people in general.
Oh, yeah. In general, sorry. Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, I thought so, yeah.
So I got confused there. But I approached them to speak to their male members.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were kind of interested. And as soon as I brought up testosterone, you know, they were like, no, we can't endorse that. I'm like, you're not endorsing it. It's just, it's now science. You know, there's hundreds of clinical trials that have been published over the last 20 years, you know, linking testosterone deficiency to depression and a whole host of other things.
Aren't doctors under some kind of extra super duper scrutiny if they prescribe testosterone? It seems to me
that's one of the reasons. So the doctors, unfortunately, you know, this is kind of what governs the way doctors prescribe, and that is they prescribe, you know, with a lot of fear that they'll get into trouble or they'll get sued, and I think that's quite sad. You know, that's what influences our doctors' prescribing behavior, and that is fear. I think what should be influencing them is, you know, patient outcome, the optimum patient outcome. But yeah, look, definitely if they're going to prescribe testosterone, it's going to have to be an off-label prescription, which means it's not, there's no, so you've got like things that have TGA approval for a particular, so testosterone is approved for men that have a testosterone level that's below, the unit is, you know, it's the number 6, I can't remember the exact units.
Is it millimoles per millimoles, deciliter something like
that? Yeah, but I know the range is, you know, somewhere between 20 and 35. So if you're sort of at the number 35 millimoles per deciliter, then, you know, that's sort of what we see in a 21-year-old. As you age, as you get sort of closer to, you know, 50, you sort of start reaching, you know, the bottom end of the range.
Yeah.
So you start reaching that number 20.
Yeah.
And then sort of as you get even older, so, you know, 70, 80-year-olds might sort of just be below 20.
Mm.
But to be 6 and below means that you've had some kind of, you know, there's been something. Yeah, there's been like an accident and it's like, you know, anatomically something's changed so that your body cannot produce any testosterone at all. And basically that then testosterone becomes essential for you to stay alive, you know, but that's registered as a you know, appropriate use of testosterone therapeutically,
right?
But any other use of testosterone and growth hormone and you know, progesterone and estrogen for women, any other use is considered off-label. Mm. And that's fine. Doctors can prescribe off-label. They do all the time. Like Botox, for instance, is off-label. The Botox is approved by the TGA for, you know, sweating, excessive sweating, and for, you know, Bell's palsy and things like that. Yeah. So it helps with, you know, paralyzing the muscle.
Yeah.
But for wrinkle reduction and, and using it aesthetically, it's all off-label use.
I think they use it also for... did you say cerebral palsy? Some people with like spasticity.
Bell's palsy, yeah.
Where they just inject them and it kind of relaxes it takes them. It makes it less painful, I think.
Yeah. And they're starting to use it for migraines now as well.
So what are you... Sorry, did you... Yeah.
No, I was just making a point that, you know, off-label is not considered, you know, it's not frowned upon. You know, it can be done off-label.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, if something goes wrong... You know, so for instance, the patient is not using it appropriately.
Yeah.
And when I say appropriate, you know, it has to be used. So the whole idea of, you know, restoring your hormone levels back to like those healthy 21-year-old levels is to basically top up the level that your deficiency, right? So if you're sitting at sort of, you know, the bottom end of the range, an integrative doctor will, well, obviously they do a full blood hormone profile on you first, and then they'll look at the, you know, what your levels are, and if your level is, you know, at the bottom of the range, they will actually prescribe something that's kind of tailored for you to get you to the top end of the range.
Still in the range.
Still within the range, yeah. As soon as you start going above the range, which is what, you know, bodybuilders do and people that abuse testosterone are going above the range.
Yeah.
That's when you start, you know, harming the body.
Yes.
Right? So if you stay within the range and get it to the top end of the range, you're doing the complete opposite. You're healing the body. You're allowing the body to do what it did really well when you were 21. At 21, your body's perfect. You know, it's at its peak.
Yeah.
Those levels are what the human body needs in order to function effectively, efficiently. Yeah. If you're 50, you go to the doctor and get a blood test, a regular doctor.
Yeah.
They'll come back and say, look, your hormones are healthy and normal for your age, right? So they think you don't need to do anything about it.
Yeah.
But they're not healthy and normal for what the human body needs. The human body needs those youthful levels in order to become regenerative again.
And in order to be functioning as well as they could. Exactly. Just because you've been around for 50 years... Yeah. Especially now that we've got, you know, doesn't mean that you have to walk around in a 50-year-old, you know, and even with things like, you know, sleep and nutrition and exercise and strength training and, you know, meditation and managing your mind. And like, there are so many variables. Like you said, we start, the endocrine system starts to shift at 21.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a decline, but it's very, very gradual. Having said that, if you're now 30 or 35 and you've done no exercise and you've been eating shit and you don't sleep well and you're constantly stressed.
Sounds like me.
If you can... fucking
hell. You described me.
Well, I will say that I did get an email from Nima that was sent to me at 3:04 this morning about some possible talk points for the podcast. I got up this morning, I look at it, I go, what the fuck is he sending me an email at 3:04? And he goes, yeah, that was the second last one I sent last night. I go, not last night. But I think the thing to keep in mind too is that, and it's not like we're just trying to push our thing or push anything really, but just have a conversation. But keep in mind also that lifting weights, increasing bone density, building muscle, gaining strength and balance and power and function, that's regenerative. You know, being well hydrated, sleeping well, managing mental and emotional health with, you know, meditation or socialization in a good way, or, you know what, there are lots of variables in this. And we can, you know, without even reaching for, you know, whatever, a hormone, we can still do other things before that are really very effective as well.
But you can only do, so you're 100% correct there.
But you can only do so much.
You can only do so much before the body needs hormones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you sleep well, so all your hormones are made while you're sleeping. So, obviously, if you sleep well and you get that really good sort of, you know, deep sleep, REM sleeping, you get those proper sleep cycles, your body is, you're maximizing your body's ability to create growth hormone, testosterone, progesterone, all the essential sex hormones. If you're not sleeping well, then obviously, you know, you're sabotaging your body. But so even so, let's say you're 50 years old and you're getting a perfect night's sleep.
Yes,
your body can only produce 50% of what it used to.
Yes,
but what you're doing by sleeping well is maximizing that 50%.
Correct.
But you're still at 50. So yeah. So if you were to combine a good lifestyle,
yeah,
with restoration of your hormones through, and the hormones that are used in integrative medicine are all bioidentical. So bioidentical means they're identical to the hormones in your body. So they're not synthetic.
Mm.
And for that reason, they're not made by big pharma, because you can't patent something that's naturally occurring.
Mm.
So the testosterone that we, you know, put into the product is exactly the same testosterone that you have in your body. Chemical structure wise,
yes,
it's identical. Yes. Whereas a lot of the sort of commercial products that are available, even, you know, like the HRT treatment for women, it's all synthetic progesterone and estrogen. It's not, you know, bioidentical. So it has side effects. You know, it kind of tricks the body into thinking that it's got enough of that particular hormone, and then the body slows down its own production of the actual hormone.
Yeah.
So, the fact that you're using bioidentical hormones is, you know, the body doesn't know any difference. So so what's happening is your body's now starting to become regenerative, and you know what what we see, you know, through the pharmacy and also the clinic which I have, we see patients come off a lot of their regular medication. So if they've got blood pressure problems, or if they're diabetic, or if they've got antidepressants, we find over time, so over 12 months or so, we don't interfere with their GP's work. We let the general practitioner advise the patient, you know, through their practice. But what happens is, for instance, if you've got high blood pressure, you start restoring all your hormones to healthy levels, you start feeling lightheaded. Right, because your blood pressure is dropping over time.
Yeah,
and so then you're
going to now don't need the medication, or not at that level anyway.
Exactly. So you go back to your GP and you say, "Look, I'm feeling a little bit lightheaded." GP does a blood pressure test on you and reduces your dose.
Mm.
And then 6 months later, you feel lightheaded again.
Mm.
So you know, you go back to the GP and he says, "Oh, look, why don't we just try you off these tablets for a while and see how you go?" And we see this all the time, you know, because what we've done is we haven't treated blood pressure. We've just made the body regenerative again. So we've just flicked that switch on, and then the body heals itself over time.
Why is this not just talked about? I mean, it's honestly, so simple. Why are people so... Do you know what bothers me is that there's just so much ignorance around this stuff, and so much fear, and so much, I don't know, what's the word?
Stigma,
yeah, good word. Just like all we're trying to do is get people healthy.
Exactly.
You know, we're not trying to get them to fucking run faster, jump higher, lift heavier weights. Yeah. We're not, you know. But okay, so this is what's happening right now. There's a bunch of people listening to this going, "Sign me the fuck up."
Yeah.
because they are.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
They're going, "Sign me up. Where do I go?"
Yeah.
Because that's all well and good, but you go and ask 10 GPs. Yeah. "Oh, I listened to this guy on Craig's podcast." Yeah. And the GP is going to go, "Well, that guy's being very irresponsible. He's a dickhead. Yes. Don't pay attention to him. And for your age, you're exactly where you need to be."
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. Exactly what's going to happen. So, unless they get lucky
I'm not saying disrespect doctors, but I'm saying this is it's an exploration worth having.
Yes.
Because you might do the exploration and find out you're good and you don't need anything. Exactly. Or you might. So where do they...
So this is going to...
And I didn't do this as an, you know, there's no agenda here. I'm not actually trying to promote your business, but...
No, look, there's depending on where you are...
Yeah.
So there's going to be an integrative clinic, you know, within, you know, like if you're in a major city, there's going to be an integrative clinic within, you know, the city somewhere.
Yes.
If not several, you know, so in Melbourne, for instance, the clinic that I have, TaylorMade Health,
yes,
is in Malvern, Armidale area.
Yeah, yep.
It's on Glenferrie Road. But then there's three others that are, you know, in that area. But that's a fairly sort of high socioeconomic area, which attracts that kind of business. Mm. But a lot of them do a lot of aesthetic work as well.
Yeah.
So, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. So you're treating the inside and outside.
Mm.
You know, we don't really do that much aesthetic work, but we sort of focus mainly on.
I know, I'm looking at you.
Medicine. Yeah.
Oh, Melissa.
It just means I don't need any.
No, you're beautiful. You're beautiful.
Yeah, I know, that was a compliment.
You're more beautiful.
I'll take that
me.
As a compliment.
Everyone's just gone, fuck Harps, that's pretty insensitive, isn't it?
So if you were to get on online and just type in integrative medicine or regenerative medicine, maybe don't type in anti-aging medicine, because then every Botox clinic comes up.
Yes,
which are now hairdressers are doing Botox now, so you probably don't want to type that in. But if you type in bioidentical hormones,
right,
that's like a key word that sparks the the list.
And if people just want to come to your house and knock on the door, what's your home address again?
No worries. Do you want to actually post it online?
We'll do that later.
So people don't forget. That way it's in writing.
I'll put
my personal mobile.
Yeah, could you? Yeah. We'll just put a Google Maps picture of your house.
No, you're not
up.
Busy enough. So
tell me a little bit about the stuff that you do in the UAE.
So the UAE, obviously, there's everyone knows there's a lot of money there.
Yeah,
right? and
it's so recent, fascinating. This
it's recent wealth, you know. So like, if
can
you
I
go
just
back,
talk about something funny? Sorry to interrupt. Yeah, I know I'm interrupting my own fucking question, but you were talking to Melissa and I off air. I don't know if you're comfortable to talk about this, but if you're not, bad luck. Talk about it anyway. You were telling us that they have essentially beauty competitions for camels.
That's right.
Tell us.
So
it's not a funny thing.
No, this is legit. Serious stuff.
Like
this is like as serious as Miss Universe.
Wow.
You know? So
Miss Camel.
If not more serious. So so I wanted to start that answer by saying there's a lot of money there, because only crazy stuff like that happens when there's a lot of money. Right? So they definitely have beauty competitions for camels.
And what are the camels judged on?
So I've seen some of these beauty camels, and I've been asked to, you know, optimize their beauty by using, you know, different pharmaceutical agents. So one criteria is having long eyelashes, right? So camels,
okay,
the longer the eyelash, apparently, you know, this is what I've been told,
the more sexy,
the more attractive the camel is. The bottom lip. Apparently.
Now, can I just say, if somebody's getting offended, this is real, isn't it?
It's 100% real.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're not making this up.
You can get on Google and Google.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you're
not know more attractive to who, though.
Like. And you're not taking the piss. You're just
This is 100%. Okay. Like, I've seen it with my own eyes. I mean, it was pretty hard not to laugh, but. And the last thing you want to do is laugh when these guys are taking it so seriously. But yeah, look, it's a very real thing. And,
so what were you asked to? You said you were asked to enhance a camel.
Yeah. So there's a difference.
Dude, next time you're doing a speaking gig, just start with that.
Yeah, I didn't think I'd be enhancing camels when I first started pharmacy. That's for sure.
A bit of collagen in the lips.
Yeah. So apparently the bottom lip. So the bottom lip of the camel.
Yeah.
The droopier it is, the more attractive they are, and that's very real. That's part of the criteria.
That is so wrong.
If you go onto the net and type in beauty camel, you'll see their droopy lip. Like, it's pretty obvious.
Mm.
So there's ways of, obviously, you know,
enhancing the droop.
The lip, yeah. So it's collagen or, you know, fillers or whatever on the lip. But, you know, elongating eyelashes is not a hard thing to do. You just increase blood flow to the hair follicles there, which, you know, there's a few products that, you know, a lot of humans use elongating eyelashes. So we just use the same.
So is it about the whole camels? Is it about the entire camel or just the head and the face?
No, it's the entire camel. So the camel looks completely different. So I deal with a lot of so it's mainly the sheikhs that are doing this, because there's a lot of money behind it. To give you an idea, the last beauty camel finalist was valued at $20 million US. You know, absolutely. So, and then if you look at they also race camels. Camel racing is a really big thing there. And Sheikh Mohammed, which is, you know, the Sheikh of Dubai, which is, you know, he frequents all of the, you know, famous horse races around the world, including the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah.
And he usually has a couple of horses in the final race. So he's very big on horse racing, but he's even bigger on camel racing. Mm. So camel racing is very different. It's more of an endurance thing. So instead of going for a couple of minutes, sometimes it can go for days, the camel race. So it's an endurance across the desert. So the camels that are racing look very different to the camels that are, you know, in the beauty contest, right? So the camels that are racing look like normal camels.
Yeah.
When you think of a camel, that's the racing camel. The beauty camels are about three times as tall.
Could you imagine if somebody's just fucking come in on this comment? They're not three times as tall.
They're three times as tall.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they're huge.
They can't be.
They are huge.
Well, let's say a normal camel's 7 foot. These ones aren't 21 feet.
No. A normal camel is... the racing camels are a little bit shorter than normal, what you think of them.
Right.
So the racing camels are, you know, probably about as tall as us. Right.
So a
beauty camel is massive because they've got the long neck. So
long
neck is also a part of the criteria. So the longer the neck, the more beautiful. But they look completely different. So they're very slim. They're not you know, sort of stocky like the racing camels. The ones I saw were black. I'd never seen a black camel before, but all the beauty camels that I saw were black. So they look very different. I mean, it's still a camel. Like, when you look at it, you think, yeah, that's a camel. But it's a very tall, black, you know, camel with long eyelashes and a droopy lip.
Oh, my goodness.
It really does sound like Miss Universe, but for camels.
Oh, here we go. 12 camels have been disqualified from Saudi Arabia's annual camel beauty contest after receiving botulism toxin injections to make their pouts more alluring.
There you go.
The key attributes in camel beauty are considered to be delicate ears and big nose. Fucking hell, I could be a beauty camel.
You could be a beauty camel.
All right, can we get off that and can we talk about what's the real business that you do in the UAE? Is it with peptides? Is it with hormones?
Yeah, we do. So,
and it's with animals or humans?
Mainly animals.
Okay.
So it's mainly veterinary work. So we do a lot of work with the camels, so racing camels.
Okay.
Basically, you know, improving their endurance, a lot of rehabilitation work, so using different peptides to repair, you know, damage to ligaments and joints. And
so recovery from injuries and stuff.
Yep. And also, you know, to make them obviously win, so to make them faster without sort of compromising anything else.
Yeah. So performance enhancing, but in a healthy and a legal way.
Yeah, and legal.
So obviously it's legal there.
But there is a very strict... They're not part of the World Anti-Doping Authority, but they have their own.
Ah.
And the funny thing is, Sheikh Khalifa, which is the ruler of Abu Dhabi, which is where all the money is, that's the wealthiest state in the UAE, he seems to win the races every year, most of the races, the majority. And he owns the testing authority, right? So he asked me.
Gee, really?
Sounds legit.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a conflict of interest there, right? So he didn't ask me, but his head vet, which is an Australian guy, he moved there 30 years ago. But he sort of contacted me and asked me to make all sorts of stuff, which I won't go into, for, you know, the Sheikh Khalifa's camels. and when I asked him, look, what's the deal with doping and swabbing and this and that?
Did he go, don't worry about it.
He said, don't worry about it. He owns the authority. And I'm like, okay, but you know, the other countries will get pissed. You know, like Saudi Arabia and you know, Dubai especially, because they're rivals, you know, Abu Dhabi and Dubai. And that's exactly what happens. Whoever it is from Dubai gets sent to audit his, you know, his labs and his you know, testing authority, and you know, they never find anything, but you know, they always go looking.
That's hilarious.
And they also have what's really big over there is their falcons. So they have these falcons,
racing falcons,
and hunting falcons,
yeah.
So there's not much we can do for them, but we can do little things to help with recovery.
And I've seen some footage, like a room where they're all sitting on a What do you call the things like a perch, a big, like the size of a broomstick or a thick broomstick?
Yeah.
And they all have these little guards over their eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're just totally relaxed.
Yeah, they do it because they don't, because they basically, I think they fly them and they compete with them.
Yeah.
At a certain time of the day,
yeah,
right, which is as it's getting dark.
Yeah.
So so they try to create that environment for them because that's sort of what they're used to, instead of having the direct sunlight, you know, upsetting their eyes and stressing them out. So that's the reason that I've been told that they put them on there. It's basically to relax them and keep the environment consistent all the time. But yeah, that's another really big thing over there. And then there's also a growing awareness for integrative medicine for the human market as well. But we deal with a lot of the sort of wealthier Emiratis, which you know, travel and they've been to America and they've heard about integrative medicine, and then they've come back and they want to sort of continue using their meds, and they have these sort of social circles that they're within, and that the word spreads. So there's now, I think the last Anti-Aging Academy of America peptide conference was held in Dubai. And they've got a fellowship there now for roughly 200 or 300 doctors that are wanting to become accredited as integrative doctors in the UAE, which is fantastic. So there is a bit of a market there as well for the humans. But the majority of my work there is veterinary. Yeah,
working with animals.
Yeah.
So something that's been in the news as late as today is e-cigarettes.
Yes.
And so I saw something on the news tonight and it was a story from the States and some kids are vaping, but they're putting, I think they're putting all kinds of stuff in, like, I don't know.
Oh, it's, in the device?
Yeah, yeah, in the device. So they're...
Like
they're,
not non-nicotine or...?
Yeah, not nicotine, other things as well. Yeah, so they're using the actual... device, but they're using it. But anyway, so tell us what vaping is, as objectively as you can, in terms of it compared to cigarettes. You know what's funny is it's like that I saw something, not funny, but just interesting. So what struck me was they were talking about, they thought that, I think they said four people have potentially died.
Oh, really?
Right? Yeah. I think this was in the States.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, how many people die every day from actual cigarettes? Mm. It's like, I don't use either. I'm not an advocate for either. I don't use either. But it's just funny. It's like, well, we know cigarettes kill you. Like, we know that's a fucking fact.
It's absolutely.
And that's been, you know, documented and researched 15,000 different ways.
Yeah. That's a good point, you know.
Like,
It's not like, look, the majority, I would say the vast majority of vaping users are ex-smokers. Because, I mean, you would have to be mad to start vaping if you're not already a smoker.
Yes.
Right? So there's no reason for you to start vaping.
Yes.
Because you're just going to get addicted to the nicotine. Right? So I would say... Yeah, if not, you know, all vapers are ex-smokers. So
this is a controversial question coming from me, Mr. Fucking Goody Two Shoes. But a few of the comics that I listen to who don't smoke before they go on stage. So I listen to their podcast and they talk. But three or four of them vape nicotine because it makes them think, well, this is what they say. It gives them a little bit of extra clarity and it kind of elevates their cognitive function temporarily. They reckon it helps them concentrate, think more clearly, and it's almost a nootropic.
It's a nootropic, yeah. Nicotine is definitely a nootropic.
We're not talking about cigarettes, folks. We're talking about nicotine.
And so nicotine definitely, it's used as a nootropic. It's used to enhance your cognitive performance.
Yeah.
What's interesting about nicotine is it's got, you know, sort of, it's a stimulant centrally, meaning in the brain.
Yes.
And it's a relaxant peripherally.
Yeah.
Which not many drugs have those characteristics. Usually, yeah, if it's a stimulant like an amphetamine,
yeah,
it's going to stimulate you centrally.
Yeah.
And it's going to constrict all your blood vessels, and you know, it's going to do everything, yeah, that you know a stimulant will do. But nicotine has, you know, opposing effects.
Mm.
So you know, it makes you a lot kind of concentration and clarity, and you know, your cognitive function improves, you know, temporarily, because nicotine gets broken down within an hour or two.
Yeah.
And that's why smokers have to keep going out every couple of hours to have a cigarette.
Yeah.
Because your body's breaking it down. So you're only really going to get a 1 to 2 hour window,
yeah,
of clarity. But at the same time, it's relaxing all your muscles.
Yeah.
So you're feeling relaxed and clear, you know, and with clear, it's not a bad feeling, right? But
how many chemicals, I know this is, you probably don't know, but you must have an idea, how many chemicals are there in a normal cigarette? So nicotine, yep, and?
Yep, there's nicotine, right? And over 7,000 toxic chemicals. Over 7,000.
In a cigarette?
In one cigarette. Yeah,
how can there be that many chemicals?
So firstly, let's talk about the difference between smoking and vaping.
Okay.
So smoking is, obviously, the difference between smoke and vapor, let's start there, right? So vapor is what comes out of your kettle and what comes off you know, a cup of hot tea, that's vapor. Mm. Smoke is when you're burning something, right? So very, very different things.
Mm.
And that's why with vaping, there's no scent, there's no smell, you know? People can sort of stealth vape, you know,
and
at their office or in the toilets or whatever, no one will ever know.
Yes.
But essentially both forms of they're both in the gas phase. So both forms allow you to inhale whatever drug it, you know, is carrying. So that's one form of drug delivery, inhalation. And it's an inhalation is just as fast as an injection. So it hits your bloodstream at the same rate. So when you're smoking and you take a puff of a cigarette, you know, you inhale, that's hitting your bloodstream almost immediately.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, patches and gum and all these nicotine replacement therapy options have never really worked that well, because you don't get the same hit as you would with a cigarette. Whereas with vaping, you're getting the same, you're getting the nicotine hitting your bloodstream at the exact same rate it does when you smoke. So smokers, you know, can very easily transition to vaping. Now, why is vaping better? And it's, you know, I don't need the World Health Organization to tell me, even though they just recently made this statement that it is healthier than smoking. But we're dealing with, you know, an e-cigarette contains, well, there's lots of different companies out there making this vapor, but or the liquid that turns into vapor, but essentially, it only needs three ingredients. Right? So the nicotine is one, that's essential. Then there's vegetable glycerin, which is a vegetable-based type of glycerin, and propylene glycol, which is not toxic. And then if you want to add a flavor, you'd add a flavor. That would make four ingredients versus 7,000 toxic chemicals, of which close to 4,000 are cancer-causing. I mean, I don't need the World Health Organization to tell me which is safer, right? Now, I think the argument is, are e-cigarettes harmless? That's what they're trying to figure out, right? So, no, they're not, because you're getting addicted. Nicotine's very, very addictive.
Yeah,
and the only way we could get nicotine up until, you know, these e-cigarettes came along, except for like the gum and the patches and all that.
Generally, it's through
tobacco,
yeah,
right? So the difference between tobacco and nicotine, huge difference. So tobacco contains nicotine, but it also contains tar and all this other stuff, which can cause cancer. Nicotine does not cause cancer. Nicotine is actually harmless to the body. Nicotine is actually in some fruits, you know, like in microscopic amounts, but nicotine, you know, you've got nicotinic acid receptors, you've got nicotinic receptors in your body.
So you saying nicotine is harmless.
It's harmless.
To me, my alarm bells go off, because I can just...
Everyone I tell
I can them, imagine people listening to this going, that's fucking bullshit.
No, it's not.
Tell us why it's not bullshit.
It's not bullshit, because nicotine is... There's...
How do we not know this? How do I not know this?
Because I'll tell you what the problem is. When people hear nicotine,
they
think tobacco.
Right.
Right, so tobacco is very harmful.
Yes,
it contains nicotine.
Yes, right? But it itself is not nicotine. That's not, one of the ingredients.
It's just one of the many ingredients in there.
Yes.
And then all of these tobacco companies add a million other chemicals in there to stabilize it and preserve it and, you know, all this kind of stuff so that they can create, you know, cigarettes.
A cigarette and a vaping pen is really, they're both delivery systems for nicotine.
Correct.
One's got a bazillion chemicals in it.
Yeah. It's all about the nicotine.
Yeah.
No one smokes so they can get the tar, you know, out of the cigarettes. Mm. They smoke to get the nicotine.
Mm.
Nicotine is harmless. Like, it's, you know, think about a nicotine patch or nicotine gum. Mm. There's people that have been chewing this nicotine gum. They're now addicted to nicotine gum since the 1990s when it first came out.
Yeah.
There hasn't been one case of cancer. There hasn't been one case of any harm from nicotine.
Yes.
You can get nicotine poisoning if you have too much.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the symptoms of that are sweating and, you know, feeling unwell, and you end up vomiting because you're having too much nicotine.
Mm.
But it's not life-threatening, right? And that's just a temporary thing because you've had too much. But, yeah, I would argue that nicotine is... I'm yet to see any significant harm come from nicotine.
But if you don't smoke, folks, don't take up either. That's the take home. Don't take up either.
You'd have
if you're a non-smoker, don't start vaping or smoking. Yeah. That's the take home message.
Yeah.
What's going to happen in the next 5, 10, 15 years when you look into your crystal ball? What's going to happen with integrative medicine in terms of what's going to develop, what's going to get embraced, what's going to become, what's going to come out of the far left field and into mainstream? Or what do you hope happens anyway?
Look, I believe that integrative medicine, which is basically regenerative medicine, so making the body regenerative, is the future of medicine. I think it's inevitable. It will eventually become mainstream.
Mm.
The question is, how long will it take? Right. So at the rate we're going, it might take 100 years.
Mm.
You know? So...
If there were no barriers, how many years could it happen in?
Well, I'll tell you what, one of the barriers which you can't remove is the cost.
Mm.
Right? So if there were no regulatory barriers, then you'd have to deal with the barrier of cost.
Mm.
And, you know, so right now medicine is subsidized on our PBS. So patients don't really see the full price of some of the medicines they're getting.
Yes.
If integrative medicine was subsidized, which it probably would become if it was mainstream, then it won't take very long at all because then it's accessible to everybody.
Yes.
Right now it's only accessible to people that can afford it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if there were no barriers, those kind of parts of the community would embrace it very quickly. Within a matter of within a decade, it would become mainstream within those areas.
Yeah.
But then, you know, areas that are not so well-to-do would struggle to afford it.
We had Professor Ian Brighthope on a few months ago. A few months, do you reckon?
Yeah, probably.
And he's an advocate for, is it CBD oil?
Yes. Yeah.
It's the non...
The non-THC containing.
Yeah, so the one that doesn't get you high.
Yes.
And kind of... So he swears by it. And another guy that I listened to a podcast, Brendan Schaub, who used to be, he's on a podcast called The Fighter and the Kid. He used to be a UFC fighter. He had a kid who was having, he has a child called Tiger, who was having multiple seizures a day, like 50, 60, 70 seizures a day.
Yeah, wow.
And I don't know how they treat him, but they treat him and they all stopped.
They stopped?
Yeah, with CBD oil.
Just with CBD, not with the THC.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting it wrong. But that oil that they use, the one that doesn't get you high.
Yeah. That's CBD oil.
Yeah. On his his kid. Amazing. And that's in amazing. In literally in a day or two.
Wow.
And it was getting worse. Yeah. And again, this is all anecdotal, folks. This is me just relaying a story.
Well, it's one patient. You know, N equals one.
Yeah, 100%. So, you know,
100%. It's anecdotal, 100%. But it's fascinating.
Do you have any idea of how that works or why that works or what are your thoughts on it? Do you think worth exploring?
I definitely think it's worth exploring, especially when there's no, you know, mind-altering components to it.
Yeah.
I don't see what the problem is, you know, and it's what the legislation changed in April last year.
Yeah.
federal government passed legislation that allows, you know, the prescribing and dispensing of THC containing, you know, medical marijuana up to 4%.
Yeah.
So 2% and higher. Sorry, up to 2% is Schedule 4, which is prescription only.
Yes.
From 2% to 4% is Schedule 8, which is, you know, the morphine and, you know, OxyContins and all that stuff. That was passed, obviously, back in April, but we're still yet to see a patient get prescribed medical marijuana. Mm. Right. So there's a problem here. So the legislation has been passed federally, but the state legislation hasn't caught up to allow... You know, so for instance, if a doctor was to prescribe, you know, medical marijuana, where would you go with that prescription?
Yeah.
There's no commercially available products, right? So and to have a commercially available product, it takes years to go through phase one, two, and three clinical trials. So you would have to go to a compounding pharmacy because that's where the exemption is. So compounding allows, you know, there's an exemption in the Therapeutic Goods Act for compounding, which allows you to make the medicine without... phase one, two, and three clinical trials when it's patient-specific only. So it has to be one case at a time.
Yeah.
You can't mass produce, obviously, because then you have to, you know, do the full trials. So there's no legislation passed in the state which allows the harvest, which is currently being done, to get converted into a form that can be used, you know, by a compounding pharmacy to make the medicine. That bit in between hasn't been you know, laid down yet. So so I think, you know, like look at America. Like in America right now, it's there's some states that have legalized it 100%, so you don't even need a prescription for it, and there's others that are still completely banned. But the stories that I'm hearing and some of the commercially available products in America are yielding amazing results. So I think it's definitely worth exploring. There's some there's some, it's, you know, there's a lot of drugs, you know, in on the market right now that are, you know, are commercially made and the TGA approved, and the mechanism is still unknown. And I think marijuana is going to fall into that category a great deal for lots of different indications.
Have you ever smoked dope in your life?
Never.
Really?
No, I've never done it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing I've done. I've not done.
Have you? No.
No.
Well, I didn't think so.
You're talking to the person who hasn't even had tea or coffee.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I tried to get her into coffee. She wouldn't be in it. Let's wind up with a few uncharacteristic questions for you anyway. So I want to ask you a few personal questions.
Okay.
So nothing to do with pharmacy or drugs or fucking e-cigarettes. If everything goes great on planet Nima, everything goes great for you, your plans, your dreams, life, everything works out the way that you want it to, what will be happening in 5 years for you on planet you? If everything goes great, things work out as though you want.
It's an interesting question because things, you know, that things never go to plan.
I know, but I'm just saying if things go to plan.
Okay, so things go to plan.
So if everything went well, what would be happening personally and professionally? What would your lifestyle look like? What would you be doing?
Well, I think the first thing, I would have a lot more balance in my life. So I'm a workaholic, self-confessed workaholic. And that, you know, is a, that's an addiction unto itself, you know? So, that's something that needs to be managed. And you know, if it's not managed, it can significantly affect, you know, your health.
Yeah.
Right. Because all you do is you just work, you don't sleep, you know, you don't really socialize that much. And that's something that I would like to, improve.
Do you remember what I called you last week when I caught up with you? You and I had a coffee. Remember what I said to you?
What was it?
You're the stupidest genius I know.
That's right, yeah.
You're the stupidest genius I've ever met. Because you know all this shit, but you kill yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Yeah, so that is, I mean, you know, I agree in the fact that, yeah, there is some sabotage, self-sabotage associated with being, you know, a workaholic and loving what you do. So I would like to have a lot more balance, firstly.
Yeah.
Balance seems to, and I, you know, I do manage to gain the balance. And then when something goes wrong, usually it requires quite a lot of time and effort to try and, you know, fix. So things go wrong a lot, your balance is out again, you know. So then you have to sort of discipline yourself to stay within balance.
Or perhaps don't overcommit.
Or perhaps not have so many businesses, you know. But then
how many hours sleep on average do you have? Do not fib. On average,
you know what? I've got this Aura ring on, which I was telling you about earlier.
Yeah,
I'm going to log into my profile and I'll tell you exactly what the average is.
Yeah,
that way it's accurate.
Yeah, I'm going to guess not more. I'm going to say at the very most 4 hours a night.
4 hours? Okay, I think you're being a bit generous there.
Yeah, I would say probably closer to 2.5-3 hours a night on average sleep.
I'm going to take a sec. Just logging in now.
Melissa, while he's doing that, how many hours of sleep do you reckon you have a night?
I get a decent amount, probably 7 or 8.
Yeah.
But I dream a hell of a lot. So sometimes I'll, wake up with
I've been going to bed earlier dreams. And earlier and earlier.
Yeah.
What time do you go to bed?
I am often asleep, out cold, asleep at 9.
Well, so I've been waking you up with these text messages.
No, I turned my phone off.
Apologies. I had no idea.
No, you turned your phone off.
Okay,
yeah, yeah. You're never going to wake me up.
3.2 hours is my average. That's pretty bad, isn't it? That's pretty bad.
I'm not proud of that.
Point two of an hour
is 12 minutes. Yeah. So that's 3 hours and 12 minutes. Yeah. That's your average sleep.
That's my average sleep. Dude. It's so bad. I know. I'm not proud of it at all. And I don't recommend anyone sleep that little, because everything is compromised when you sleep. Like, so, you know, we were talking about hormones before. You know, if I slept, you know, properly, if I slept, you know, a good seven and a half hours a night, you know, I myself use you know, hormones like testosterone and certain peptides to boost growth hormone, because I'm deficient. So, you know, I'm only 40, but my levels would be a lot better naturally, and I'd have to use probably less hormones. So, yeah, look, your body is repairing at night. You know? So, it's what your body does during sleep, we cannot recreate. We can maybe recreate, I don't know, 1% of it, maybe, you know, like with by hormones and this and that. There's so much happening that we don't know. And, you know, so, I mean, it should probably be coming out of your mouth, not mine.
That's all right. No, I like listening to you try to fucking pretend you know what you're talking about.
So that would be the first thing. The next thing is, I'm quite passionate about integrative medicine and, you know, how it, you know, it is, you know, quite, it's difficult to ignore, you know, the sort of feedback you get from your patients. So when patients come in and their life is completely transformed.
Yes.
And, you know, they're thanking you for it. They shouldn't be thanking me. They should be thanking integrated medicine, you know, So through the pharmacy and through some of the doctors that I work with, we're simply just delivering this, you know, new technology to these patients. It's really the integrated medicine and the discipline of integrated medicine that's giving them these benefits. So when you see that, you sort of want that for everybody. And how are we going to get this to the masses? You know, the only way to do that is to scale the service, you know. So just to let you in on, you know, something that we're working on in the US, we're working on some software which can upskill a normal doctor, just a regular general practitioner.
Hey, Melissa, see how he's gone off this personal question and he's now back into business. See how he's deflecting there?
Yeah, I'll get back to
personal. I'm on to you. Yeah, well, now we're talking about scaling business. This came
we're
out
back
of a
to
personal
business.
Question.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got a point there.
Finish it off. I'm just fucking with you.
But look, basically, this software, the reason why I've you know, thought of the idea and invested time and money into it is because I believe it will accelerate the inevitable, which is integrative medicine or just regenerative medicine being the mainstream, the future of medicine. I don't want it to take 100 years.
Yeah,
you know, seeing what I see and how it changes people's lives, I want it to be, you know, tomorrow that it's mainstream medicine. So how can I make that happen? So that's something that's quite personal to me. But you know, we're unfortunately in the sick care model, you know, and And sick care is obviously, you know, being reactive rather than proactive.
And illness is profitable for big pharma.
And band-aiding it is great because you come in every month and you give them a new band-aid. So for me, that's quite personal for me, you know,
Definitely.
Somehow, you know, aid in that, you know. Not, so there's a lot of people trying to do that. There's a lot of people trying to accelerate the inevitable. I just want to sort of help out. And I think in 5 years, if I could have made a significant, you know, contribution to that side of medicine, I'd be very happy. And having a bit of balance, you know, in life, work-life balance would be good.
My goal for you in 5 years is to get you in the gym on average 3 days a week consistently.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's being
all right.
A bit ambitious.
Last one. Where are we at for time?
107.
So my last one, which is a bit of a red herring, and no one's going to expect this, but or anticipate this anyway. So you, your religion or your belief is Baha'i. Religion.
Right. Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what that is and how. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is Baha'i and how do you live that and what does it mean to you?
Okay, so Baha'i faith is, to give you a bit of a background, my family, we escaped Iran. I'm Iranian. You know, my parents are Iranian. I was born in Austria, in Vienna, but we went back to Iran just before the revolution occurred, and we had to escape because we were Baha'is, right? So
really?
Yeah, because the Baha'i faith believes in a prophet, Baha'u'llah, which comes roughly a thousand years after Muhammad, which is the founder of Islam.
Yes.
So so it's a completely different religion. And it's only 170 odd years old. It's a fairly new religion. In 1844 is when, you know, the religion sort of began.
It's 32 years after the Mormons, I think.
Is it?
1812, I think, Joseph Smith.
Interesting.
I'm not sure, I think.
Yeah.
Someone will correct me. I didn't know it was that new.
It's very new. So basically, you know, it's just the reason why I tell you that story about, you know, escaping Iran and going through a bit of hardship with, you know, like being refugees and getting, you know, caught. We got caught in the UAE. I was only 4.5 years old, so I do remember a lot of it. So getting thrown in jail, you know, from jail to jail.
Wow.
I remember a lot of that. But, you know, when I sort of compare my story to, like, my uncle was with us, for instance, you know, on the boat, my story is a little bit different to his.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some of the more traumatic scenes I've replaced with a different story, you know, so I don't even remember some of the stuff that happened. I've just blacked it out and replaced it with a story that didn't actually happen. Amazing what the brain does, you know, to make you cope. But so you know, going through all of that and then finding refuge in New Zealand, and then eventually, you know, coming to Australia, I can't ignore, you know, the fact that there was so much sacrifice.
Yeah.
From my parents and other Baha'is at the time. A lot of Baha'is were, you know, killed and tortured, you know, during that revolution because they would not, you know, admit to, basically they wanted them to renounce their religion. And
they wouldn't deny their faith.
They wouldn't deny their faith. And if you believe in something, you know, then that's really the way that you should be. So it's obviously extremely close to me and I take it seriously. But look, the Baha'i faith, what I like about it...
What is the basic kind of... give us a snapshot of what it's about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, and this is what I love about it. So it's just like every other religion, for instance. Like you've got Islam, you've got Christianity, you've got Judaism, where we do believe in a prophet that comes from God and delivers a message. But we believe in something called progressive revelation, which if you think about it, every religion kind of believes that. So we believe that every thousand years a prophet will come down and renew God's message. Right? So because obviously, you know, mankind, society, our comprehension is improving every thousand years. So we can understand more of the, this is the theory of progressive revelation. So
sorry about that, Melissa. I'm just making microphone noises. Sorry, mate.
That's right. So every religion kind of believes that. So in Islam, the Muslims believe in Christianity. They believe in Jesus. Mm. They believe in Moses. They believe in Krishna, Buddha. And then if we go back, you know, 1,000 years again, the Christians do believe in Moses and Krishna and Buddha. You know, and then you go back to the you know, Judaism. Mm. The Jews do believe in, you know, Buddha, but they don't believe in any religion that's come after.
Right.
Right. So the Baha'i faith is just the newest, right, of the mainstream religions. So what I love about it, though, is it unites all the religions, right? So if I'm talking to a Christian, I believe everything they're saying. You know, so they're talking about the Bible, they're talking about Jesus. Yeah, I believe in Jesus. You know, the only difference is I believe that Jesus's word was appropriate for that time. And Baha'u'llah's word is appropriate for now. And look, usually after a prophet is, you know, given to us by God, something significant occurs in the world. You know, the Renaissance age, and you know, you can date, if you keep going back, you can find some significant changes in society. Since Baha'u'llah was revealed in 1844, just look at what's happened to the world. How much has changed? You know, like compared to, you know, the way that we were back then to now, where, you know, in the palm of our hand, we have access to unlimited
information, knowledge, information. Connection.
We're so much closer now. And Baha'u'llah's, the Baha'i faith's main message is unity. Christianity's main message was love. And every religion has one main message. I just think that the Baha'i faith is very appropriate for today. You know, it's more of a way of life rather than being, like, we don't have a church. You know, sort of the Baha'i faith members get together every 19 days and we have like a kind of a deepening kind of thing where we sit down and
every 19 days.
Every 19 days.
So that's going to fall on a Tuesday or a Sunday
That's right. So it's the Baha'i, the Baha'i calendar is, you know, 19 months, 19 days per month.
Wow.
But, you know, when you look at the message from Baha'u'llah, it's very similar to what you see in the Bible, very similar to what you see in the Old Testament. They're all very similar.
What's the text called?
Oh, the main text?
Like the Bible. What's the Baha'i Bible?
It's called the Kitab al-Aqdas. Well, Kitab in Farsi means the book of. So Aqdas is the great, so the most great book is the translation. But the interesting thing about the Baha'i faith is because it's so new, Baha'u'llah has, you know, thousands of texts that have been written and sealed with his seal. Whereas, you know, you go back 2,000-3,000 years and it's a miracle that we even have one book that's been compiled. So there's a lot there, and it's obviously fit for the next 1,000 years. But it's a very peaceful religion. You know, we don't believe in you know, any, there's absolutely no violence at all of any kind in the Baha'i faith. And like I said, it's a way of life. You know, so there's no sort of church that's or synagogue that's judging you and, you know, giving you a score and banning you and, like, you know,
is there hell in the Baha'i faith?
No, there's just being close to God and being further away from God. So when you pass away, the closer you are to God, that's heaven. And the further away you are, that's considered hell.
Okay.
So we can understand that a lot better now with the level of comprehension, whereas, you know, 2,000 years ago, we may not have been able to understand or comprehend something like that, or that kind of, you know, idea. So it was a lot more sort of literal back then.
I like it. And you're heading off tomorrow morning at some ridiculous hour to... Are you heading to the States tomorrow morning?
States, yeah. I'm going to go... I'm giving a lecture at the anti-aging American peptide certification course. So that's going to be exciting.
Do you like public speaking?
I don't mind it. I think... I don't love it. So it's not like I look forward to it, right? But I don't I don't dread it either.
But you like it because you're educating people in that space,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Are they all medical driver. And health professionals?
Yeah, they're all doctors.
Right.
They're all doctors. So they're, what they're doing is they're going through a certification process, which gives them the ability to prescribe peptides with the appropriate level of education. Because any doctor can prescribe a peptide, but you know, you want to be able to prescribe it and know what you're doing, right? So these doctors are going through a pretty intensive... I think it's a 2-year kind of commitment, but it's not every day for 2 years.
Yeah.
They do monthly kind of lectures, and they have to pass certain modules. But it gets them; they become experts in the peptide space for prescribing purposes.
Well, mate, in the interest of you getting more than 3.2 hours of sleep, I'm going to let you go. But if people want to jump onto one of your websites or find out a little bit more, just give us a plug.
Yeah.
So whichever one you want.
There's I mentioned the clinic, I think, TaylorMade Health.
Yeah, mention the clinic. Yeah, whatever you want.
So TaylorMade Health, you can just Google that. It's TAILOR. That's only if you're in Melbourne and you want to see an integrative doctor.
Yep.
There's the pharmacy, which is the Coma Compounding Pharmacy. And then, you know, so with the e-cigarette thing, you know, if you need a compounding pharmacy which can actually compound it, then Coma Compounding Pharmacy would probably be one of maybe the only one they can do it. They work with a company called Nikit, which is a an e-cigarette sort of service which uses, you know, the prescription. They have doctors, there's doctors behind it. I have a small share in that as well. And basically that's our way of kind of connecting people that want to vape with, you know, an appropriate doctor that knows what they're doing. So it's kind of like we're like the middleman where we sort of direct you. That's Nikit, so N-I-C-I-T. We'll leave the rest out.
All right, mate. Well, you have a good trip and see if you can get some sleep. And
thank you. Maybe thanks for having me. It's been good.
Maybe hit the gym once a week.
Once a week is a good start.
All right, mate. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, mate.